podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome back to A Celtic State of Mind. I'm Paul John Dykes, and today I am delighted to be joined by James McKenzie. He hasn't left us since his incredible showbiz appearance on the telly. He's back. He's been working away in the background, haven't you, James, on the Axon blog, and it's coming along really well. So congratulations to you for doing all that, putting in the hard graft. Big Yogi won't be joining us today, but there is plenty to discuss. James, you pointed out it's been a few weeks since you've been on Axon. What's changed since your last appearance in terms of where we are, the performance, the consistency, the momentum of Brendan Rodgers' side?
Well, I'm trying to remember what the actual date was. I was hosting a Friday. I think it was before we played Hearts at Tynecastle. And a lot has really happened since then. We said, I'm pretty sure we all said on that show, there's going to be multiple twists and turns in this title race. And there was a massive twist that weekend. Rangers dropped points on the Saturday. Everything was set up for Celtic to return to the top of the league on the Sunday and to drown out all the noise that had been surrounding the club the last few weeks. And we bottled it, plain and simple. And Brendan Rodgers, he went for the SFA in his post-match media appearance. He went for John Beaton was the referee he named, and I think that's where the problem started to arise, that he named the referee and the VAR official on the day. And is the hearing today or is it tomorrow?
It's
before the Livingston game, I know that for a fact. Mm-hmm. I've had to look through some previous cases where officials have been brought to an SFA hearing for a breach of a similar practice is what Rodgers was breached. It was disciplinary practice 72, which is football teams, officials, bodies, members of staff. They can't criticise a referee in a manner that hints at a lack of integrity or incompetence. Something along those lines. I had a look at some previous cases. Stuart Kettlewell called out a referee in 2018 when he was Ross County manager, and that got him a 3-match ban for the Ross County manager. Michael Beale, when he was Rangers head coach, you might remember he had the spat with John Kennedy after he beat us at Celtic Park a few years ago, and he was pointing the finger at Kevin Clancy that day. Obviously, a bit more tempers flared on the park than off it, and he got a 5-match ban for his role in what happened that day. And Rangers put out a statement questioning Willie Colum after a refereeing performance in 2018. They got a £5,000 fine for that. So there's a few different cases with a few different results. And you've got to wonder what implications this can have on the title race. I mean, a 2-match ban is what could be posed to Rodgers, something like that, a 2-3-match ban. At this point in the title race where you really can't be doing with outside factors affecting the team, it has to be the team on the park. You don't want injuries or managers going off the touchline really affecting the team at all. It's either going to be a match ban, a fine, or a caution. Rodgers, he hasn't really been known in previous years, previous tenures at Celtic for going at the referees or being too scathing on refereeing performances, which I think maybe because it's a first-time offence, they'll let him off lightly. But you could also look at the fact he's the Celtic manager who's naming a referee with all the criticism that's coming under VAR and the referee in this season. You've got to think they might try and make an example out of him, because Brendan Rodgers might be the fall guy for all the criticism that's been levelled at VAR over the last few months. But it could have some massive implications on this title race. I know most of the work is done on the training ground, but you want your manager on the touchline at the end of the day.
Well, you do, and we've been talking about margins all season, James, and when you're getting into this period, and in particular the lead-up to the Glasgow derby, every single margin can result in the final score on the day. And I do think there is an influence of the manager being in the dugout, otherwise he wouldn't be there. You know, anyone who says that doesn't make a difference if he's not there, then why is he there then? You know, there's been managers in the past who sit up in the stand with a telephone And obviously just speak to the people down in the dugout.
During the COVID season where Armstrong Okoflex was getting subbed on, they had the AirPod in his ear. Neil Lennon was in the stand that game. So technology is advancing. The manager can still have communications with whoever's going to take charge on the day, but you want Brendan on a touchline shouting the instructions to his players at the end of the day.
You do. You absolutely do, right? And I think that there have been examples in the past whereby he has had to act and act like with instinct, James. There was no thought process. He had to react to, for example, a red card. You all remember the Simunovic red card, for example. And he's acted and he's made that change and it's been an instant thing. So having him elsewhere in the stadium is definitely a margin. And I think what's interesting is you wrote a blog about it, and go and check it out on the X platform, because Behind the Whistles got involved in the discussion and they've actually been giving their take on it. That's a podcast actually with former referees Des Roach and Steve Conroy. Des, I believe, was the host of the Foundation Supporters event just the other night, and it was a great event. The Wakes played The Glory and the Dream live that night as well. So go and have a wee look at that, because obviously there's loads of disagreements, as there always is, when it comes to the decisions themselves and the conduct of Brendan Rodgers and what they think will happen tomorrow. As you say, the hearing will be tomorrow, James. But you raise an interesting point to me, and I think it's pertinent, that if there has been a precedent set previously in terms of how you're going to be punished in Scottish football, this is where it gets, for me, a little bit anxious for Celtic, because we need to be treated the same way as others have been. And you quoted the regulation within the article that you wrote, and it was published this morning on Axsome.net. And within that, if you're a manager or if you release a club statement, any member of your club, for example, comes out and questions the competence or questions bias. Interesting how these two words are included in the regulation of any referee, then you will be pulled over the hot coals. And that's what's happening to Brendan Rodgers. But I totally agree with you. I think that it is a disadvantage not to have him in the dugout. Who steps up? Well, obviously, he's got his own team. John Kennedy's part of that. John Kennedy's done it before. Hey, Gavin Stratton's done it before. Remember the deep, dark days of COVID, and Gavin Stratton was the manager for a day. Remember that? What game is it? Hibs?
I think it was that game that I mentioned just there, where you had potentially the AirPod on. And that was, was it? I think John Kennedy had COVID that day, and that's why he couldn't take charge.
Yeah, and we were down to the bare bones. But we will find out tomorrow in relation to the punishment. But the reason we're running with a tagline here about contempt and arrogance, there is a reason. And we're talking about Don Robertson being announced as being the referee for our game on Sunday against Livingston. We're going to the Tony Macaroni. It could actually be the last time we ever go to the Spaghetti Had. Scottish Patter has renamed that stadium. When do you think the naming rights were sold to the Tony Macaroni? When do you think that was then, James? I looked at it this morning.
When has it always been like that since they came into the league? I know they came into the league in 2018. It was 2018.
Yeah, it has.
It was their first season. And they got the big blockbuster branding for their stadium upon the re-arrival into the Premiership.
2015. I mean, that's a club that is never tired of moaning about how skint they are. David Martindale constantly telling you that he can't afford anything. And obviously what he does is he packs his team full of big athletes. The West Lothian Globetrotters, I think Jim Orr calls them. But it has been effective in the past against Celtic. It's not a given on Sunday. There are issues to be ironed out for us to get that result. And obviously, if a ban is put in place, I'm guessing it would be immediate. I'm not sure if it would be a suspended one. So we might be without Rodgers. Let me know if that's the case in the comments, if anyone can tell me different. But yeah, we're going to the Tony Macaroni probably for the last time, because the naming rights will go somewhere else. Not sure where they're going to go, to a local chippy or Pizza Hut or something like that.
I've seen some suggestions that they're going to call it the Nisa Stadium or the Premier Stadium on Twitter.
Probably.
I think that'd be pretty nice.
Yep, the Spa Stadium. the thing with Livingston is they've gone into administration, I believe, more than once. And I think the fact that they're in the league, you get used to it after a while. Like you say, they've been in the top league since 2018. You get used to them as a Premiership club. Are they a Premiership club, though? Well, they are on merit, because that's why they're here. But what I'm talking about in terms of the infrastructure, the stadium, the fan base, the financial element of it, and I look at that stadium, and fair play to them, they give us more tickets than a lot of opposing teams give us these days. But I look at the stadium, it's tired. You know, the old seats are a million shades of yellow because they're faded and replaced. It looks terrible. The pitch, obviously, is a big issue as well, James, and I don't think that lends itself to improving the brand or the product of Scottish football. I think the smallest attendance of the season, league game, was at Almondvale this season. And as I say, they're constantly going on about being absolutely rookit. You go back to the days of, coming third in the league under Jim Leishman, getting into cup finals and winning the League Cup under Davy Hay. Unbelievable. Punching above their weight, getting into Europe, etc., etc. But they haven't been able, I don't think, to build on it in terms of the infrastructure of the football club. Fair enough, they've managed to get into the top league. But remember, that was under, what was his name? David Hopkin, wasn't it? The ex-Scottish international, the ex-Leeds United player. He came in, he had a brilliant run at Livy. He got them into the league, and there they have stayed. If and when they get relegated this season, James, they're not coming out of that championship for a decade. They're staying in that league.
I think over the last sort of decade, the championship's been incredibly competitive. You had Rangers, Hearts and Hibs in the championship. They won the season a couple of years ago. And then you've got teams like Dundee United who have been up and down. Even Hearts have been up and down still to the championship. And you look at the teams around there, Dunfermline were a staple of the Premiership for God knows how long, and they're still down there. I think they're closer to the bottom than the top at the moment. I think it's a fight between Dundee United and Raith to get promoted, and I think Kilmarnock are getting rid of their plastic pitch this summer, so I think we'll finally be rid of the plastic pitches come next season. I'm not too sure what surface they use at Starks Park. Is that plastic or grass?
Starks?
Yeah, the Raith Stadium.
That's a good question. I may be in the vicinity. It's not a stadium that I would frequent. A boy I was at school was heavily involved at Raith Rovers, actually. But no, I couldn't answer that if it's a grass.
Some of the comments can tell us.
Someone in there will be able to tell us. But yeah, the championship for me is a league that if Livingston drop into that league, and it looks pretty clear that they will, they won't get out because they don't have the finances. And now if you trace this back to the Stadia Group, right? Anybody can check this out because it's a matter of public record. The Stadia Group was Gavin Masterton's company. And he got onto this idea that obviously in order at that time for any club to get into the Premiership, God knows what it was called back then, but it's called the Premiership now, you had to have X amount of seats in your stadium. It was like an all-seater stadium rule. So what he went around doing was using Murray Metals from his pal David Murray. He was building stands at various football clubs through this company called the Stadia Group. And I just find it really interesting that the clubs who were all involved in the Stadia Group, because they also introduced things like hotels combined within stadiums. You'll see that at the Tony Macaroni. I think one of the corners is a hotel. That was one of the brainchilds of the Stadia Group. Having a physiotherapy unit rather than each club having to pay for physiotherapy. So the physiotherapy team would go around and it would work with all the clubs. And it was the same with hospitality and things like that. So in theory, it sounds like a great idea. You've got a business alliance there. But obviously, it went a wee bit further than that when you start looking down the list of EBTs between the clubs who were involved in the Stadia Group. Because Rangers were involved in it, Livingston, Dundee. And honestly, when you start looking at the amount of signings and the amount of transfers within that little realm of the Stadia Group, then I think a wee bit more investigation would probably come up with a conclusion that all was not well. Livingston ended up going into administration, as did Dundee and, of course, Rangers, who then were liquidated after that. Livingston, I don't think financially, have ever come back from it. I mean, they're paying their top players £500 a week. That's why Devlin left for Aberdeen. Despite all that, James, this isn't an easy game on Sunday, is it?
Yeah, Livingston's long been a ground that you always suspect Celtic could be causing some problems there. I think they came up when Neil Lennon was Celtic manager, and then the hoodoo sort of started there. And Postecoglou began to exercise the demons during his season, although he did lose his first match, the Tony Macaroni, we can't forget. I think it was Andrew Shinney that scored them that day. It was a really hard watch, to say the least, that game. But we bounced back later in the season, and it's been relatively smooth sailing ever since. Brendan Rodgers has played there once this season, and despite a early red card for Joe Hart, I think it was a fairly comfortable performance. I remember Dyson Maeda scoring an absolute screamer on that day. Brendan Rodgers said after the game that it's like you don't feel like you're playing with 10 men when Dyson Maeda's on the park. He is like an extra man. And he'll be a heavily important player for Celtic this weekend. And our player who played a starring role that day was Rio Hitate. And this could be the game where we finally see him back in a Celtic shirt. I don't think it'll be an hour or 90 minutes we'll see him on the park, but I think we'll see him in some way, shape or form. But Livingston, it is always a tough ground to go to. The pitch can always cause you problems. As you mentioned, they are a very physical team, but you can just look a few games ago when we had them in the Scottish Cup, they were still able to cause us problems, not on the pitch. The pitch wasn't the deciding factor that they eventually had enough quality to see them off, but we made that game far more difficult than it really should have been, which has been a consistent theme for Celtic this season. Games that should be easy, we're making them far more difficult than they really need to be. We're leaving far too much space. I remember the first goal, I think it's Alistair Johnson and Stephen Welsh leave a massive gap in the defence for the player to run right through and score. It's things like that that we just need to grind out of our game for these last few games. We've got a massive title race going on. As you mentioned, the margins are fine. You can't really be allowing silly mistakes to potentially cost Celtic the title. I know we'd all be absolutely violent if it was a goalkeeping error or a defensive slip-up that eventually was the thing that cost Celtic the title at the end of the season. So we really need to sharpen up and get ready for these next few games.
No, you're right. And we're going to be talking from back to front about the team, the likelihood of the starting 11, and moving forward, looking ahead to the summer, where we are in each of those positions in terms of where we need to strengthen. It might seem obvious, but it's all about opinion. So let us know in the comments section. But we're going to stick with the tagline at the moment because it feeds into another massive point in relation to the fact that when you look at the situation of contemptuous behaviour by the SFA, the arrogance of putting in the very referee, James, and you can look at this two ways. The very referee who is at the heart of what Brendan Rodgers is up in front of the beaks for tomorrow. He's Don Robertson's at the heart of this situation. And the SFA, in their wisdom, think that it's a good idea to let him be the referee. Now, on the one hand, as a Celtic fan, you're thinking that is just... And the word that I've seen over the last 24 hours is arrogant. And I've got to agree, it's arrogant. But the contempt shown towards Celtic as well. It's almost like we can, so we will. You know, the sooner Crawford Allen's out of that position in Scottish football, the better. But who on earth is replacing him? Because it's a cultural issue, and whoever fits the bill will replace him. But on the other hand, and we've spoken about this as well, James, you're a very balanced commentator on football because that is your livelihood. So, you know, although the emotions are there as a football fan, you've got to try and think about things from two sides. The other side that I would suggest is the referee. Is it fair on him? Is it fair on Don Robertson with the furore around what's happened at Tynecastle? Tomorrow, at some point, we're going to have the hearing. And then come Sunday, you know, he could be the guy that everybody's saying, you're part of the problem, mate. Where is the sense in putting him in the firing line like that?
Yeah, I've seen a campaign over the last sort of 3 years that's been to protect referees. They get too much stick off of Scottish football fans. They get too much stick off of Celtic and Rangers fans. There's too much conspiracies flying around, whatever, but then why do you throw Don Robertson to the Wolves for the game this weekend? Imagine he makes a big refereeing call that swings the game Livingston's way and Celtic lose on Sunday. And that the uproar following the game would be absolutely massive. And even worse, imagine Brendan Rodgers gets a match ban and he's in the stand watching this game while Don Robertson's refereeing it. It's just a really silly situation to put themselves in. I mean, could find any other referee to throw in for this match, and I'm sure there wouldn't have been any complaints. As you mentioned, it does kind of scream a bit of arrogance, and you got to think Will there be pressure for Don Robertson to give Celtic favoured decisions on Sunday after the backlash, the drama, the headlines that was caused by his performance at Tynecastle? Is he going to be more leaning towards Celtic for his decision making? It's a referee needs to be going into a game completely neutral without any outside factors affecting them, because their job at the end of the day is to call the match down the line, call it unbalanced and unbiased. And you're throwing Don Robertson into this game where there's a chance for things to creep into his mind, such as potentially having to lean towards Celtic for a decision for potential bias.
Yeah,
to have, potentially having to overcompensate.
Yeah.
It's just a terrible situation to make that didn't have to be made.
No, and, you know, if you're trying to be balanced about it, you've got the arrogance of making that decision as a two-finger salute to Celtic, but then you've got the referee to consider, because let's put it this way. At some point this season, Kevin Clancy has and his family have received death threats. Kevin Clancy and his family received death threats. This is his part-time job, James. And the thing is, I can assure you, Kevin Clancy is not a fan of Rangers or Celtic. He doesn't support either of the two clubs. Sorry to disappoint anybody who thinks he does. 100%, I can guarantee that's the case, right? And people go on about, how do you know that? Well, I've said before, James, if I'm speaking to people, I'm a sponge and I'll find out information and you find out sources. But I can tell you directly, Kevin Clancy is not a Rangers or a Celtic fan. But him and his family received definitely no young kid in that house. So the SFA aren't thinking about these things, James. And I'm not saying that Celtic fans would do that to Don Robertson. I'm not saying that, suggesting that at all. But they've got to look at the situation and say, how can we protect our staff? How can we protect our refs who have already been under intense scrutiny, even more so since the introduction of VAR? And when you've got whatever's going to happen tomorrow hanging over Sunday, you're putting the same ref in. I think it just absolutely reeks for me of contempt. But on the same token, and this actually leads us to the next big point of conversation before we get into the football as such, it's the contempt now being shown by the board to our fan base. So on the one hand, James, right, you're thinking it's us against the world, right? The officials, the authorities, we're the anti-establishment club. It's us against the world. No, it's not. No, it's not, actually, because the fan base is also being shown a level of contempt, in my view. The word used by the Green Brigade was vindictive. It was a joint statement by the Green Brigade, the North Curve and the Boys fan groups. And basically, you had written a cracking blog on the fact that the Green Brigade had reintroduced this idea of filling out behind the goals at Celtic end, reminiscent of the Borussia Dortmund Great Yellow Wall, right? It's going to be the great green and white wall of noise and colour. And the video footage of the last games where that was where that took place at Celtic Park last season were phenomenal. You're not telling me that that level of support didn't help the women's team last season, because it absolutely did. We broke records with the attendances. We're constantly being reminded, support the women's game. They're up against some very prominent, high-profile voices, James. You know, women's football. And we've all supported them on Axon. We've covered games. We've been to games. We've interviewed Fran Alonso. We've been to the press conferences. We support them. We were a patron for an entire season, paying sponsorship towards the women's team. Yet, the level of contempt shown towards this initiative to try and support the women's team, I think, just flies in the face of the first discussion we've just had, whereby it's obvious to us that the authorities do show us absolute arrogance when they're making decisions towards Celtic. We need to stick together as a football club, as a fan base, and then it's fragmented the very next day by the board. And you've seen the statement. I know you have. No doubt there'll be a follow-up piece by yourself. What do you make of it? I mean, it was a great opportunity, I feel, to heal some of the fractured relations that we've obviously seen all season. The Green Brigade had been banned from Celtic Park for a number of games. Tickets were cancelled, you know, and we're at a stage now where margins, let's go back to that opening discussion we had, margins is what we're talking about here. And the club and the fan base via these fan groups could have come together on a decision, but they haven't. What do you make of it?
Well, just look at the title race right now. I think Celtic women are just 1 point behind the Rangers women in the SWPL1. It could get to the point where fine margins could be what decides their league title at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And if you look at last season, when the Celtic end was brought in for the game against Hearts at Celtic Park at the end of the season, the Celtic women won that game 2-0. They did their job that they had to do in the park. It was just Glasgow City getting a late goal that eventually secured them the title. The Celtic women did their job. And by all means, if you look at the quotes from Fran Alonso, when you look at the quotes from the players about the support and the turnout on that day, they were all delighted with it. They were incredibly happy with it. Anything that grows a women's game, anything that grows a Celtic women, is something that the club should be looking for. Not trying to keep them out to send some sort of message or whatever the intentions behind this is. We know the Green Brigade has been banned from games the first half of this season, and they're not going to show up for this game or the next few games that will be at Celtic Park at the end of the season. And I think it's a shot in the foot. It was a chance to really push the women's team on. We saw record attendances. We saw record attendances last season. They could have broke even more records, and we could have been a part of the continued growth of the women's game. But I don't think we're going to be able to set more records this season. And it could be a real shot in the foot how tight the title race there as well. As we've been mentioning, the fine margins across this entire show.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And again, it could have been twofold, James. So you give the push to the women's team. They've obviously had a change of manager. Fran Alonso was a hugely popular and influential character at the helm of the women's team. He was brilliant. He was great with us. Gave us a brilliant interview earlier on this season. Probably told us too much. Maybe that's why the club aren't happy with us, because you know, he just said come in and do the interview, knowing that he was going to get on a plane to America, and he didn't have to deal with the backlash. But we did that interview and we've pushed it, and the club have been pushing it. And obviously they've sent us the usual email over the last couple of weeks asking if we want accreditation for the game. That's all fair and well, James. But, you know, the fan media in terms of contributor base going to a game, double figures. If you get a set of fan groups, as they showed last season, to come together to create the great green and white wall, what an incredible bit of backing that is for the girls, right? So you've got that to start with. I'm glad I never called them good girls there. I might have got into trouble. And then the other side would have been to try and build relations again with a fan base that the club's been up against all season, you know, going toe-to-toe. So I think it is an opportunity lost, absolutely an opportunity missed. There are comments coming in from the
contributors. I just want to jump in again. You can't forget last week, the Celtic women defeated the Rangers women. That could act as a pendulum swing, and that could act as the momentum swinging back in Celtic's favour. And you want to be riding that wave of momentum to the end of the season.
Absolutely.
And that just makes the games coming up at Celtic Park look like even more missed opportunities.
Absolutely. Follow it up. Keep it going. Build that momentum. Half Man, Half Pie has had this week's award for best name from the comments section. So well done to you as well, Half Man, Half Biscuit. Half man, half pie, it all works. I weave through the looking glass with referee incompetence, and we can now call it what it is. If you call it incompetent and you're attached to a football club, you will be up for a disciplinary hearing. Jungle Lion, the club are using the Celtic end from last year in their promotion for tickets. Oh, there we go. There we go. Used to walk into the Celtic Superstore, and behind the actual counters was the big mural, wasn't it? And it was the Tifo from the 125th game, at 25th anniversary game at against Barcelona. The Green Brigade obviously done all the work, raised all the money, and it was an incredible spectacle. Yet, you know, the club are quite happy to stick that maybe on a canvas, but they won't support the group. Yeah, it just absolutely reeks, Jungle Lion. I agree with that. JT, are we out to walk the dog before the show starts? JT, the reason I'm bringing this up, it's so important to do it. I myself, and I keep getting reminded by people on the socials, not the Celtic fan base, I'm getting to the wrong side of 45. So yeah, get out there and get a wee bit of fresh air and a bit of exercise. It's so, so important at any age. But I think as I get older, it's something that I've had to work into my daily routine or regime. So yeah, get out there and get the earphones on even. It was raining this morning, but I went anyway. Ian Roy for my run. Florida here. Former Miltonian boy. There you go. I asked the other day where Ian was tuning in from. He's in Florida. Yes, we're all jealous because, as I say, it's raining out there. And I just went for a 4-mile run, which, by the way, at the age of 45, isn't as easy as it was 30 years ago, can I just say.
I don't know how good the weather is in Miami, in Florida these days either. I keep up with the tennis. I know the tennis tournament in Miami has been held up really badly with rain over the last few days, so Ian might have summer weather to what we're seeing out our window right now.
Yeah, there you go, Ian. It's not always sunshine. Bill McCabe, Bill, unfortunately I was out today because there is the school have been ravaged with scarlet fever. So I was a wee bit busy this morning. I will get back to you. Bill McCabe has won two tickets to the Paddy McCourt gig at Gracie's. He won them on the Celtic World podcast. They did an interview this morning with Paddy McCourt, talking to the cult legend, and Bill McCabe won a couple of tickets. The thing is, Bill had already bought a couple, so what he has done is he has offered these tickets to an Axon viewer in relation to our fundraising endeavours to meet Jamie Tierney. So if we are able to do something in that respect, and we will over the next week, Bill, we will be able to raise some cash for wee Jamie. So brilliant gesture. Thank you very much, Bill, and I'll definitely catch up with you soon as well. Magnet 67. Now, let's go and put in a top performance and a few goals against Livingston. We're going to be speaking to James about the lineup and where we are at this stage of the season and where we need to strengthen come the summer. But before we do that, I mentioned Paddy. Every single time I bring up cult icons, James McKenzie, you always get a completely different list depending on who your audience is, what your audience is, who your audience are. Let us know in the comment section. What's your definition of a cult hero? Because I put it out to the Axon team last night and I got some quite surprising replies, James. And I thought to myself, you can't say, for example, Danny McGrain is a cult hero. That's like saying The Godfather is a cult movie. Danny McGrain's one of the greatest. I would say Danny McGrain's beard is more of a cult hero than the player. And I tried, and I sent it over to you, I tried to try, you know, define what is a cult player. And it's very difficult, actually, to define, because it's one of these things whereby everybody's got an opinion on it. And defining what a cult player is, let us know what you think in the comments. Let us know who you think a cult player is. And if you want to win, like Bill McCabe did, a couple of VIP tickets to the gig, email me at pauljohndykes@gmail.com, because you will be in with a chance of winning a couple of tickets if you tell me who your cult hero is, Celtic, that is, and why. Now, here's my definition, James. You can tell me if you agree or disagree. I think it's a couple of different things, right? It can be a player who is undoubtedly talented. Sometimes they possess a natural talent. It's like they don't have to work for it. They've just got it. One of the guys, the frustrating guy that you went to school with, James, that never tried but always just done it off the cuff. And this is a player who underachieves, often through the bevy, bad diet, partying, womanising, etc. Straight away, you've got loads of them popping into your mind. Or it could be a player with limited ability, right, who runs through brick walls for the team and often ends up achieving more than the better players in terms of appearances, trophies, etc. So you're now thinking, all right, Anton Rogan, maybe Tony Ralston, that type of player, right? Or I think there's a third category now, and the third category is a player who comes to Celtic with no prior connection to the club, but for some reason he builds a relationship with a fan base, often through aspects beyond football. And I had a great suggestion last night of a player in that category, Mark Crosas. Mark Crosas wasn't a Celtic great, and on the park he was obviously a really decent technical footballer. I don't think he liked the bevy and the womanising and the gambling and all that stuff. Yet, he's a bit of a cult. And why is that? And I think it's because he built that relationship with the fan base, which he continues to do to this day through social media. So that, for me, is a cult player, James. Do you agree? Disagree? Is there anything you would like to add?
I'd say you're pretty fair in your estimation. I think when people are throwing cult heroes out there, a lot of them are just Celtic legends. I think you've got to be able to distinguish the two kinds. A legend is someone who is clearly a quality player, clearly a Celtic great. A legend is someone like Scott Brown, like Billy McNeil, players like that. Those, we know the category legend is. But when you think of the cult heroes, it's players who they stick in your memory. Maybe they didn't set the world on. Maybe they weren't sensational. They give you a moment of magic every now and then, whether it be a big goal in a derby or a big goal in a European night, something like that. That's how they stick in your memory as a cult hero. So if I was to think of a couple of cult heroes from my time recently, I'm thinking John Gaudette you have that game against Inter Milan, but he just didn't really have the application to fully make it at Celtic. I think you could probably name Olivier and Cham in that category as well. We'll all remember that goal against Lazio, the last minute winner. He's got a goal against Rangers as well, but he probably didn't perform to his greatest at Celtic and eventually left the club. So if I'm thinking recent memory, I'd say those two guys would fit the cult hero tag. A player that sort of was on the fence for me when it comes to that is Mikael Lustig. I'd say he probably fits more of Celtic legend category than cult hero, but he fits into one of your categories perfectly in the fact that he came over with no affiliation to Celtic. I think it was Scott Brown and Neil Lennon. They're both one. Scott Brown said, Neil Lennon, who is this guy? The guy comes in with loads of tattoos and long
dodgy
hair.
Moustache. Scott Brown, nothing wrong with long hair.
He comes in with a dodgy hair and then they're wondering, is this guy going to make it? Is this guy going to cut it? And then, he's here 9 years later with all these trophies in the bank, all these titles, and he leaves with the good graces of the entire support. So you could argue Lustig's maybe a cult hero, but I think he fits more Celtic legend category than cult hero.
That's a great one. It's a great one. You said you wondered if he was going to cut it. Here's me and you talking about bad hairdos, dearie me, the irony. Mikael Lustig, I think it's the behavioural side of it rather than the player side. Because as a player, as you say, the guy was class, right? He was an international footballer who played at the very top internationally and also in the Champions League for Celtic. So when you look at his ability, you don't think cult. But when you look at his behaviour, and what I'm thinking is beach balls on his head, players being in his back pocket, police hats, when he scores against Rangers and it's the old shrouded Turin over his head. And of course, where he was caught in the gym, pretending I'd to play some kind of musical instrument.
If you look at the other fullbacks the last decade, I'd say something like Emilio Izaguirre is more of a cult hero. I'd say Izaguirre maybe fits that tag as a cult hero because obviously went away, he comes back later on, but I'd say Izaguirre probably fits that tag.
Wasn't it Paul the Tim who scouted him the second time though?
Yeah, it was Paul the Tim that brought him in. His best pal.
When we're talking about this elite football club with all the best systems in place, and I think Paul Tim just phoned him and said, you available? Aye, okay, I'll put it out on the socials. And the next thing you know, we sign him. By the way, that is tongue-in-cheek, ladies and gentlemen, in case you think we believe that's what happened. Paddy Lavery, are we getting the real Big John today or the fake pleasant one from last week? Hashtag, we demand the grumpy Big John. Well, he read that, Paddy, and he thought, I'm out, and he ditched us because he got a wee upset there. He's a wee bit busy today, unfortunately, but he will be back next week, hopefully, all going well. Lackwinder Pal, I think that's how you pronounce it, 20 years of nothing in Europe, and Nicholson said, we want to be world-class in everything. Aye, dead on. Ah, but, we take recommendations for fans for left-backs to return to the club, so how are we going to be world-class? David Boyle, Rangers are being rewarded for bad behaviours at Celtic. Keep their mouth shut and take it on the chin time and again. It's time to rein in the SFA and call it out publicly. Well, we'll see what happens tomorrow. We're going to be talking a wee bit more about the game on Sunday because we've got two big challenges this week. The first one obviously coming against the SFA and then the second one against Livingston at the Tony Macaroni Arena. We'll start at the back. We'll talk about Joe Hart. I'm going to throw this out at you. It's his third season, James. Is it his best yet?
His best yet? No, probably just how successful the season was. You'd maybe have to go with the first, but there's still a double potentially up for grabs if Celtic can get their act together for these last few weeks of the season. I think the writing looked on the wall for Joe Hart towards the end of last season, so I don't think you can say that. I myself said multiple times on the podcast I wanted him replaced, but there's been a few moments this season where the Hearts really stepped up, especially the last few weeks when Celtic haven't been performing at their best, where you look at where we are right now in the table, we could have been worse off. We could have been well worse off over the last few weeks where we've stumbled multiple times, but we could have lost far more games than we actually ended up losing, and Joe Hart has a massive part to play in that. Some big games, big saves and some really big moments, and you can tell he's really doing his best to ensure that his final season at Celtic is a successful one. And you've got to look at the goalkeeper search that we have for this summer. I think you have to get that right. You can't afford, the last time Celtic was really in the market for a goalkeeper and it looked like they were maybe going to spend big money on one, we went and got Vasilis Barkas, and You can't afford another scenario where you get that signing of a goalkeeper wrong, and then you're stuck playing someone like Scott. We'd be rotating Scott Bain and Benjamin Segrist for the entire of the season if we got that goalkeeper decision wrong. So it's one we have to get right. But Joe Hart will be looking to make up for his last performance at Livingston as well. I think you'll remember the video of him celebrating one of Celtic's goals in the media room with Sky Sports after he'd been sent off. So he'll be looking for a solid performance. He'll be looking for a clean sheet as well, because I think in the league we've kept just the one clean sheet since returning from the winter break.
Mm-hmm.
Three clean sheets if you count St Mirren and Bucky Thistle in the Scottish Cup. For a team like Celtic, the standing we have and the quality players we have compared to the rest of the opposition, it really should be higher.
No, it definitely should. And the reason I ask about the best season in a Celtic jersey, I'm going to throw it out to the comment section. What do you think? I think he's played slightly differently this season. I don't think that under Brendan Rodgers there's been this onus on him to spend a lot of time on the ball at his feet. And I think he's been able to concentrate on just the goalkeeper duties, the traditional goalkeeper duties, because I know the game is changing and a lot of teams play with the goalkeeper being part of the you know, the start of the attack, I suppose, and keeping possession. But there's no way, and I'd like to see the stats, maybe Alan Morrison will furnish us with stats near the end of the season in terms of the amount of passes to Joe Hart, because I don't think it's anywhere near what it used to be. Because under Ange, it was a two centre-halves, wasn't it, and Joe Hart, and the ball was played around the three of them. An incredible amount, often putting Joe Hart under pressure. I don't think he filled himself fully glory, actually, with regards to what he did with the ball a lot of the time. Tried to take guys on, wee shimmies, all this kind of stuff. And I remember he did it in one of the games, the pre-season games under Brendan in Japan, and we lost a goal. And he's never done it again. He's not done it unless, you know, he's been put under pressure and he's had to do something, James. It's not something that's part of his game this season. And I think he's been able to lead. He's obviously the second vice-captain. If Carter Vickers and Callum aren't playing, then he gets the armband. He's a good leader. And I think just the stops this season have been massive. Big, big stops against Rangers in a 2-1 game. People criticised them for the free kick. But look at the stops in the first half. He had two brilliant saves. There's been a great save in the last game against Livingston when we were sitting at 2-2. Talking in margins, James, how would that have changed the dynamic of the game, going 3-2 down at that stage? The big, big save against St Johnston. And there's been others. There's been others. So I actually think there's an argument to say that his final season in professional football has been his best in a Celtic jersey over the three seasons. Let us know in the comments if you agree or disagree. We were talking about right-backs earlier on. And Mika Lustig was one that you spoke about being potentially out of the cult icon category because he was too good a player, too consistent a player. And maybe his behaviour and his relationship with the fans gets him into that. What about another right-back called Jean-Joël Perrier-Doumbé, James? Can you remember him?
I don't know if that's my lifetime. My sort of memory and knowledge of Celtic starts around 2007 in its earliest stages. I think Doumbé is out of my realms, I think.
He's out of your realms. Well, I'll tell you something. He was the first ever player for Celtic with two hyphens in his name. There you go. But that's not what he's famous for. He's famous for scoring the winning goal in a cup final on one of only six appearances that he made for the club. He scored in a 1-0 defeat of Dunfermline Athletic. He then fell out with Gordon Strachan and barely kicked another ball. Does that make him a cult hero or just somebody we didn't see playing very often? Let us know again in the comments. But I'll tell you something with regards to Lustig. When we lost him, I think we actually struggled. We struggled for a number of seasons to find a consistent top standard right back. And we went through a lot of them, James. I think, you know, we talk about guys like Elhamid. Elhamid wasn't a bad player. But, you know, I sometimes think he was weak when it came to the challenge, if you like. I think he was very technically gifted as a footballer. And he left probably a wee bit prematurely. I think he was a victim of the COVID, going back home, etc. Maurice Bauer was one of the right backs that we had. John Joe Kenny. There were a few absolute shockers, right?
I was going to say Jeremy Frimpong, but I wouldn't even say Frimpong at that point. We'd effectively replaced Lustig yet, because I don't think it was in our plans for Jeremy Frimpong to be a starting player for Celtic. He probably would have settled into the B team or something, but ended up carving out his place in the team. And as good as Jeremy Frimpong is now, a starter for the Dutch national team linked with every top team in Europe wants him. It wasn't that finished article when he was at Celtic yet. As much as we could all see the signs, as much as we all knew he was going to grow into a player that was that good, he wasn't that at Celtic. I think it took us until Josip Juranovic to really get a consistent performer at right back who would turn in a great performance week in, week out.
I agree with you. And I agree on Frimpong as well. Frimpong, you could see the talent, but the talent I seen him possessing wasn't defensive talent. For me, he was an attacking player. He was an offensive player at Celtic. And the League Cup final, the one that's remembered for Julien scoring the winner and Foster playing an incredible game against Rangers. And the warning signs were there that Rangers kind of had a sussed under Neil Lennon at that stage. Frimpong was the best player on the pitch. He was absolutely brilliant that day. He got sent off. And I think he got sent off and still won the man of the match. He was that good. But yeah, he's gone on. His next transfer fee is going to be astronomical. But I agree, until we brought in Juranovic, there was a real lack of quality in that position. And let's not forget what Tony Ralston did prior to Juranovic's arrival. But then we found ourselves in a situation, James, where we had Alistair Johnston coming to the club. And all of a sudden, we were pretty well covered at right back. Johnston, at a certain point of the season, wasn't having his best campaign. Do you think he's come through that? Do you think he's starting to show the Johnston of old?
It's been quite funny as well. Celtic have kind of got worse since the turn of the winter break. I think after Johnston's been getting a bit better. I don't know if it's just because of how poor the team has been. His performance at a half decent are starting to shine a bit more. But he's getting a lot more involved in an attacking sense, which is something Brendan Rodgers would have definitely said to him. I'm not sure how many assists he had before winter break. I'm sure the number of assists he has this season is still pretty low, but he's getting forward a lot more. He's getting crosses in. He was linking up really well with Yang when Yang had a spell in the team before he got that suspension. He's kept up with Nicholas Kuhn down that right-hand side as well. So I think Alistair Johnston, he's been finding his groove this season because it looked like he was starting to stagnate after he made the flying start the season prior. And last season he came in to the tail end of the season, the business end of the season, as people call it. And now that the stakes are raised at this stage in the season, I think you're going to see Johnston getting better and better. And we're seeing more about the kind of player he is when he gets thrown to the fire in a high stakes game. He's the sort of player that will stand up and be counted for. And at Celtic, you need players like that.
You do. You absolutely do. And at this stage of the season, people will say it's always the case at Celtic, and I get it. But at this stage of the season, it's all about just getting the results on the board, James. I know it sounds cliched, but we just need to get that win on Sunday. It'd be great to get a good performance, a few goals, building that momentum, which is definitely for me, it's probably the thing we've spoken about all season, is to try and get the momentum and then continue with it as well. The rest of the back four, though, Greg Taylor at left back, our only real recognised left back, although Brendan has suggested that his backup is Liam Scales, will start unless he's injured for the rest of the season. But I think there's more of a question around the central defensive areas. Carter Vickers starts if he's fit, and let's hope he is between now and the rest of the season and the end of the season. Who partners him for you, though, when everybody's fit? Now, I know Scales is injured. Navroski has disappeared from view again. The lesser seen Navroski. Lagerbelk's fit, Welsh is fit. Who starts alongside Carter Vickers for you?
I think it will be Stephen Welsh this weekend. I'm not too sure how long-term Liam Scales' injury was. When Brendan Rodgers spoke about the injury, he said it was frustrating, but I think the way he was describing it seemed a bit more like a knock. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see Scales back in the squad in some shape or form. We need to wait and hear Brendan Rodgers' press conference for a bit more of an update on that. But right now, at this current moment, I think it will be Carter Vickers and Welsh. The only other option that can really come into the team right now is Lagerbielke. Navroski's on the sidelines at the moment. He's injured. They picked up an injury a few months ago. And then it'll obviously be Greg Taylor at left-back. I was surprised that Greg Taylor wasn't brought on for Scotland last night. Andy Robertson picks up an injury. He's playing as the wing-back. You've got Tierney in as the centre-back. Taylor's only left-back on the bench. Instead of going for Greg Taylor, he brings on Lewis Ferguson and moves Kieran Tierney to left back. So it was a really surprising decision I saw that he didn't bring on Taylor. I thought he would have got some sort of a chance to try and push for his place at the Euros. He spoke of his ambitions to try and break into that Scotland squad for the Euros. We know the riches the national team has as far as fullbacks goes. So if Taylor's really wanting to make a push for that national team, I think he needs a big end to the season. And with the pressure heightened and the stakes on for Taylor to perform, if he wants that spot in the Scotland team, I think we might see him closer to his best in these next few weeks. I think he's been a decent performer since he returned from injury, since he took that place back from Alexandre Bernabe, who's now in Brazil. So he'll be looking for some more good performances from Taylor heading into the end of the season.
What do you make of the fact that you've got Brendan Rodgers, whereby it's, I was thinking about this morning, right? If you cross him, you're kind of out of the equation, right? So you've got Saeed Haksabanovic, who thought it was a good idea to start posting Jip on Instagram. By the way, I found out that the reason we can't stream at the moment on Instagram is because the account is less than, or fewer than, rather, 30 days old. Okay, so as soon as it's a month old, we'll be streaming on the Insta page as well as Facebook, Twitch, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Twitter. Yeah, so Saeed Haksabanovic thinks that's a good idea, and he's pumped out to Stoke. Then you've got Bernabe, who was ridiculous against Kilmarnock, and we you know, it's his fault, the goal, the equaliser, and that could be a very, very important goal to lose near the end of the season. And he gets pumped out to Brazil. You've got Palmer, who's scored some cracking goals this season and made some assists, apparently injured. And I was going on about his disciplinary record and the fact that he picks up daft bookings. Some people might think it's no daft to have a tribute to your friend on your T-shirt, but you know you're getting booked the minute you take your top off, right? So he does that and he gets booked, but I've never seen him since. Is Brendan Rodgers punishing these guys? And has something happened that we don't know about Lagerbielk? Is he getting punished as well?
Well, he celebrated with a fan after he scored that goal against Fire, and they done the knee slide right into the fan's arms. So maybe that's what he's been punished for. I'm not too sure. But he's lost his place in the Sweden squad now because we've stagnated his career by not playing him. And it begs the question, why did we cancel his loan in January? He got 2 minutes off the bench.
Against Celtic.
Seemed like a shut up to the Celtic support about asking where Lagerbielke is. And again, it's just a testament to how poor our recruitment's been over the last few seasons. And you've got to be looking at this summer as the real markers to how big of a factor Mark Loyal had to play and how bad the recruitment was. He was the head of recruitment, and he's the guy that's gone as a result of the poor recruitment. So it's time to bounce back, get back to making some good signings once again. The last time we did that was when Andrew was running the show.
And good signings. You think that was easier? You think it was a lot easier than we've made it, James? You know, like, you've got a budget. You've got a massive budget, right? You should have the data systems in terms of recruitment. Keep banging on about it simply because I was party to a presentation last season at a club who are not even in the Premiership, and their data systems for recruitment are tremendous. You can find anybody. And obviously your criteria, whittle it down to cost, wages, age, and then the attributes of the player, bring it down. Then you get the scouting involved. I was reading with interest yesterday, Barcelona paid Fabrizio Romano $400,000 to showcase some of the players they wanted to move on, etc. Brilliant work if you can get it, Fab. But yeah, I think that we do need to show a real improvement in the quality and the standard of player, because I'm saying, is he being punished? It could well be that the gaffer just doesn't rate him. But he has punished other players, hasn't he, for poor performances or poor behaviour. Which begs the question, you know, if you're on the wrong side of Brendan, you'd be as well just leaving the club because you're not going to get back in by the looks of it. Celtic follower, you are watching on the YouTube. Anybody out there who hasn't subscribed yet, give us a subscribe. Why? It's free for a kickoff. It helps us with the algorithm, which is very, very difficult to predict. And also, we are in the throes of adding more content to the channel, as well as the Axrom shop, the Axrom blog, Axrom Live, which have all been launched over the last 12 months or so. We have got big plans for more content. So we already go out once a day. More fully produced content is coming your way. Get subscribing. No news whatsoever on the replacements for head of recruitment, head of scouting. Why not? How can we identify players if there's nobody to do it or organise it? The one thing I want, James, right, I want us to get away from nepotism and favouritism and cronyism. I want to get away from that, because the person who's the best at that job doesn't have to share a surname with the chairman or other members of the backroom team at Celtic, and they don't have to be an ex-player. I love the fact that we have got ex-players at the club, but let's make sure they're in the right roles. You know, I've spoken to Feyenoord fans, Ajax fans in the past, who talk about the fact that ex-players are involved in recruitment, but not in identifying or scouting players. They're involved in going to speak to young players and trying to convince the young players through maybe their parents, James, come along, like Kluivert chapping on your door, come and sign for Ajax. You know, that kind of thing. I get why we would deploy and employ ex-players, and it's important that we do to continue with the traditions of the club, but not at the head of recruitment, not within the scouting department, not running the B team, if they're not the best possible candidate for the job. And I think that's the most important thing this time round.
Yeah, if we're led to believe the reports that have been coming out in recent weeks about the parameters that Mark Loyal was actually working on, we've seen some of the sort of guidelines that he'd been set to look for with signings and all the players that were signed under law, they really sort of fit that, those parameters. It was really hard for me to actually find any real sort of golden players there. And we need to change the approach for this summer. I'll be interested to see how much of a hands-on role Brendan Rodgers has in these transfers, because we've heard from Leicester they had a hands-on role and they didn't make a lot of incredible signings. But now that he's come back to Celtic, he didn't really seem to have a hand in any of these transfers. I don't think you can look at most of these transfers and say, who's a Brendan Rodgers signing? I think you can maybe say Adam Ida's a Brendan Rodgers signing. He seems like a player that the manager's pushed for. But apart from him, who really is there that seems like a player Brendan Rodgers
wanted? Don't forget Nat Phillips. Never forget Nat Phillips.
So do we let Brendan Rodgers have a hands-on role? Because if he's handpicked Nat Phillips, which that seems like an almost certainty, and we know what the fan opinion of Nat Phillips is, you really need to get a new head of recruitment in soon. And they need to get planning for this summer, because the plans we'll have for this summer is still what Mark Lawwell's had and his vision for Celtic for the future. We know at this current moment that doesn't work. So we need to adapt. We need to get someone new in with new ideas that can take the team forward. That should ultimately be the aim of Celtic with every single decision that they take with regard to the club. It should be with the best view to take Celtic forward. You can't be standing still and you can't be going backwards. Always has to be looking forwards.
Yeah. You know, the criteria you speak about with regards to the remit of the recruitment team, had that been in place previously, would we have signed Kyogo, Giakoumakis, Juranovic, Starfelt or Moy? They would have all been out the age bracket, wouldn't they? They were all over 25.
The reason that we spent so highly that summer was because we'd lost the league the season before.
Yeah.
We'd been embarrassed in a sense. Going into that transfer window, Celtic was no longer the best team in Scotland. And we had to get back to that position. So therefore, the board was ready to spend the money to go out and facilitate that. And if Celtic can scrape by with the league title at the end of the season and a Scottish Cup as well, I think you might see similar transfer windows to the last one or two that we've seen with regards to the summer. Because we've got by. We've got by with the league title at the end of the day. So what reason is there? We're still the best team in Scotland. I don't think you're going to see another summer like the one we had under Ange unless we lose the league.
What I'm going to say, James, right, is although if the criteria were in place before, we would have lost out on Kyogo, Giakoumakis, Juranovic, Starfelt and Moy, which would have been criminal because they were a year older than the remit, right? That remit could have also signed Abada, Rio, Maeda and Matt O'Reilly. Therefore, why didn't we buy players within that kind of standard, that class? Because we didn't. And the reason we didn't is because we don't have a good recruitment system in place. And I've said it before. If you use the data, you even cut down on someone with a bad record in terms of the coach stroke manager calling the shots at the end. Because if you've got the data recruitment system in place and you go from 1,000 players down to 25 players and then the scouting whittles it down to 5 players, those 5 players are the best available within the remit you have, within the criteria set that you have got. And at that point, every single one of them is likely to be the player required to fit that particular position in Brendan's team. It then comes down to a point of whether or not Brendan thinks he can fit in to his team? Does he have the mentality to play for Celtic? Does he have the personality to fit into the dressing room? So even if you're not great and you pick the second best of those five or the third best of those five, you're still picking a very, very good candidate, James. And I think previously what we did is we were just working on recommendations and we brought in loads of players thinking that it's like shooting fish in a barrel. One of them is going to be a £15 million gem. No, it's not happened, and it's not happened yet. I'm keen to know about the midfield and forward for the weekend. Let's start with the midfield then. Matt O'Reilly, Callum McGregor, Rio Hatate, they're, for me, the best three midfielders we've got. What's the midfield this weekend, though? You wouldn't start Rio, you've already said that. Bernardo scored last night, I think, for the under-21s.
Yeah, he did.
Yep. So, what's your midfield three?
I think Callum McGregor will be back in the team. If any of the injured players in the midfield are going to be coming back, it will be Callum McGregor. I think, unfortunately, Tomoki Awata has to make way. He's been a solid performer when he's played for Celtic the last few weeks, but I don't really think him and Callum McGregor work too well together. They're too similar a player, and they're both defensive-minded. So I think the way Celtic, when Celtic are playing in Scotland, you're going to be playing attacking football. You can't have two defensive midfielders playing for Celtic Scotland. It's got to be going forward. So Iwata makes way for Callum McGregor, then you have Matt O'Reilly and Paolo Bernardo in front of them, with Rio Hatate getting a 30-minute cameo for Bernardo towards the tail end of the game.
I like the sound of that. And it is the midfield I would start with. As big a fan of Iwata as I am, I just don't think the fit would be right. And you don't need two defensive midfield players playing against Livingston or most of Scottish football. Up top then, Kyogo's played his way back in and scored his way back into the reckoning. Maeda, I have said in the past, have made this fit. He plays. He is the cult player from this team. Daiza Maeda, the guy that can score a hat-trick and then miss three much easier chances. The guy that can score an absolute top-level goal in one game and then hit the Green Brigade with the outside of his left foot in another game. That's a cult hero. And the fact that he's dyed his hair blonde and it's going ginger makes it even better. He's on the left. On the right, though, that's, I think, where there's maybe a debate because Yang's back as well.
Yeah, Brendan's been speaking big of Yang today. I need to look a bit more into some of the quotes he's been saying, but he said he thinks the suspension is going to benefit him. He's looking better in training than he ever has. So, and we can't forget the rise that Yang was on before he got that suspension. But when Nicholas Kuhn being the form player right now, I don't think you can drop him. You play Nicholas Kuhn on the right, Kyogo at striker, and then the team's cult hero, Daiza Maeda, on the left wing. I don't think the dyeing the hair has made him more of a cult hero. I think the bald look with the moustache that he had was enough of a cult hero.
The Bond villain. Look
to him. Yeah, the Bond villain look to him. I think he was already a cult hero looking like that.
Yep. I'm going to bring up one final comment before we wrap up for this Wednesday afternoon. 1,500 strong on a Wednesday afternoon bulletin. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, wherever you get your daily dose of Axon. Ewan Boy Martin, people think he's one of my favourites. Well, he did jump on a ferry from Dunoon to come and be on the Wander Round Paradise on Monday, the big fella. I hope a lot of you Axon contributors can come and enjoy a day out in Dunoon for the Axon gig on May the 17th. These gigs are brilliant, right? And for people thinking that it's all about someone trying to cash in on the name of Celtic and all this kind of stuff, I tell you something, right? A monthly gig with regards to Axon, going to the likes of Dunoon or Glasgow or Greenock or wherever we've been, isn't obviously that there's a whole financial element to putting it on in a venue and paying people's way and flights and hotels and all the rest of it. It's about having a great gig with the community of Axon, and these have come out time and time and time again. As we said on Monday, over 100 tickets sold for Dunoon. It was Ewan's idea. I'm giving the big fella credit. Bring Axon to Dunoon, he said. We're bringing them to Dunoon. The ticket link is underneath this video. The other two gigs with Paddy McCourt, who appeared this morning on the Celtic World. Go and check it out. And he's going to be on the Unrestricted View tonight. He's doing the rounds as Paddy. He's doing the promo. They have piqued the interest of two documentary companies who want to capture the atmosphere of Celtic fans in the week leading up to the Rangers game. So on the Thursday at Gracie's, we've got a German documentary team coming along to film the gig, interview the punters, all that kind of stuff. And then on the Friday in Grangemouth, closer to your hometown, I believe, James, at Caesar's Paradise, we've got a different documentary team coming to do the same. Absolutely sensational. So get yourself along to an Axon gig. If you fancy your luck, though, Join the competition by emailing me at pauljohndykes@gmail.com. Tell me who your cult hero is in the hoops and why. That's all you need to do. And I will randomly pick out a couple of tickets for the VIP section where you get to meet Paddy and probably end up in a documentary as well. Thanks, everybody, for getting involved. What do you make of all the discussion points today? Let us know in the comments section. Give us a big thumbs up and join us again tomorrow at 12:30. All that's left for me to say, thank you, James McKenzie, for rejoining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
Network.